Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke, and as a note on useless pay-per-views, we didn't forget Bodyguards vs. Bandits, WWA shows, or the WoW extravaganza. But let's be honest, that's a different level of who gives a shit, and I'd rather be the kid face-to-face with a car door frisbeed by Brock Lesnar than relive those.
I'm Kieran O'Rourke, and this week I've been watching a lot of Lance Armstrong documentaries, and I have to say, the length this guy went to maintain this mythic status really takes some balls. Why not pop along to my new website, givelanceachance.com. Maybe together we can one day help Hope ride again.
I'm G. John Chase, and apparently, China's campaigning to get into the Hall of Fame again, after she accused Triple H of battery, and she accused Sean Waltman of raping her. I guess in a last movie, somebody really did fuck her brains out.
And I'm Old Man Jones, and I've got a lot in common with Lance Armstrong. For example, I too cannot find my balls, but that has more to do with Alzheimer's.
This is the panel for the 46th Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us debate the most useless pay-per-view in wrestling history, next! Hello everyone and welcome to the 46th Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside G. John Chase.
I finally finished Batman.
Old Man Jones.
Sorry, where am I?
And Kieran O'Rourke.
Easy now.
And we are here today to bestow the honour of the most useless pay-per-view in the history of professional wrestling on some poor show. As usual, we not only have our own opinions around this table, but we have reached out to you guys, the loyal listeners, for your votes on what you think is the most useless pay-per-view in history. It's going to be an interesting debate, I feel. There were many, many candidates for this that came up in the feedback. Quick programming note before we advance. We will not be doing a show next week, but we will be back in 2 weeks' time. On the next show in 2 weeks' time, we'll be doing the best build-ups in wrestling history. And this can be build-ups for a pay-per-view, build-up for a debuting wrestler, build-up for a match, build up for anything. What hype do you feel works for you more than any other? Send them in to get them in early to scgradio@hotmail.com. But to get to this week's show, the most useless pay-per-view ever, so much to discuss, so many nominations. Carl, we're going to go with the one that you felt was appropriate for this title first. Before I do, I want to get to the feedback for the people that voted for yours. One of the most voted, Wyatt Sheepmask from the UK Fan Forum, says King of the Ring 1995 by a country mile. Highlights of the show being Bob Backlund campaigning for US government and the sound of Vince McMahon on commentary realizing that he hadn't created pro wrestling heat hatred, he created actual hatred. Dave 1981 from WrestlingForum.com says King of the Ring 95. I don't want to elaborate on it anymore as I don't want to think about something it's taken me years to forget and erase from my mind other than it being utterly horrible. Kamara's Tash from the UK Fan Forum says another vote for King of the Ring 95 here. Savio Vega wrestling 4 times in one night. My favourite, Shawn Michaels, being eliminated in a 15-minute draw with Karma, which felt like an eternity. Mabel winning the thing in a crap tag team main event. Can't remember if Brett Lawler was any good, but the gimmick was ridiculous. Johnny Guitar from Pro Wrestling Only says it promised little on paper other than Shawn being crowned king. When it failed to deliver on even that, and even then, the way the other brackets were laid out and the participants involved offered nothing in the way of quality matches like Bret and Owens' March to the Throne in previous years. There were no title matches booked on the card, and I know that injuries stopped some people from working, but no Owen, Luger, Bulldog or Jarrett, which was pretty much the mid-card, plus none of the new signings they'd hired like Hakushi, Triple H, Candido or Spicoli were on the show. And rounding this out, Crazy Egger from the TPWW forum says King of the Ring without question. It's not even train wreck good. So there were many other people who just dropped in King of the Ring 95 here. Carl, I know you want to sound off on this, the most useless pay-per-view ever. An interesting way, because we're not saying worst of all time here, it's a little bit different, so go ahead.
Well, I think you could also make a case for this being one of the worst of all time. I wouldn't just put it solely on useless. The only throne that should have been in Philadelphia that night should have been of the white porcelain variety. I don't know about anyone else, but I wasn't crying out for Marathon Man Savio Vega, which, you know, whilst they had him wrestle 4 times over the course of the night, if you were stupid enough to watch the free-for-all build-up, they eventually go nowhere with him, so that was all irrelevant. The match is as... email as a reference there, you've got Sean having to go 15 minutes with the supreme boring machine Karma, which is then followed up by a 10-minute Undertaker Mabel
match. That's terrible. That one's terrible.
You know, even the patience of a saint wouldn't get you through that. And all of that to eventually lead to Mabel becoming King of the Ring in a move that the Philadelphia crowd, it has to be said, were absolutely... they adored. They were in adulation. They were so caught up in the moment, I'm sure that they were throwing confetti. It was confetti they were throwing, wasn't it?
It was not a reaction becoming of a king.
It most certainly was not. Brett Lawler, whilst that you could have had a good match there, it went less than 10 minutes. it was the Kiss My Foot match, which was a ridiculous stipulation even by the standards of the time. And the best of their feud had already been and gone. You know, yeah. We're 2 years removed from what was the sort of the peak of their feud, and it's struggling to find something to do with Brett. And then it's got to be said, that main event that went nearly 20 minutes.
With Sid and Tatanka
on one team, Bigelow and Nash on the other. And I'll say this for Kevin Nash, we give him a lot of stick, rightly so. But it would have taken a miraculous effort from anyone to be a decent drawing champion when you look at the cavalcade of misfits and the fuckabout gang that he had to deal with in 1995. Mabel is quickly forgotten about after the SummerSlam card, almost, you know, you could argue probably before the SummerSlam, they just booked themselves into a corner.
Yeah.
And a criminal misuse of Michaels when he's this is still in the early stages of his babyface, and you can make that so much more important than they did here.
Most useless pay-per-view of all time, there's a different distinction here, because the thing is, this is an interminable show, don't get me wrong, this show is just dreck, but is there a use for it?
Now, I want to be careful how to word this, because, you know, my credibility with the internet means a lot to me. But at least they were trying to create a challenger for Diesel with Mabel. I'm not defending Mabel, I'm not saying it was a good idea in principle or practice, but at least they were trying. And I think on the subject, when it's a useless pay-per-view, at least they followed it up, as you said, with Mabel at SummerSlam. Again, I'm not saying it was a good idea. I'm not endorsing Mabel in any way, shape or form. I think when we compare it to other pay-per-views, at least there was some kind of semblance of direction, even if it was like a direction off a cliff.
You know,
and, you know, for whatever that means. So I just, at least there was thought, a purpose. Not that anyone in their right mind would agree with that direction, thought or purpose.
It's because you like Sir Mo, isn't it?
Give me some old.
Kieran can bring some interesting points really, because it's kind of like we really kind of need to define uselessness. Their intention, obviously, is with every King of the Ring, or at least they try to anyway, the intention is to create a new heel, or maybe new babyface, whatever, but it's usually heel, you know, and sometimes it was to create a contender for SummerSlam. But the part where it becomes useless is who they pick, okay? You can have all the intention you can in the world for the pay-per-view, but it's like who you pick and the decision you make is how it determines whether it's useless or not. I sat through this abomination and had a Chinese takeaway, and I was sat there actually wishing I'd get the shits just so I'd move away from the screen. It was just to go on the whole awful thing, right? Savio Vega, I've never fucking wanted to watch him in all my life, and the fact I had to watch him four times is probably one of the reasons I almost wanted to have the shits. The thing that's, I think, that really sticks in people's craw is Mabel winning, and the part where it comes into the uselessness is they want to create a new opponent for Diesel. That's fine, okay, we get that. But Diesel's going through a tricky time with this reign at the moment, okay? It's not the most successful reign ever. So really, you want to put him in the ring with the best opponents and with the best workers and with the people that can hide some of Nash's weaknesses. There's other people that could work that show as a heel, who could win King of the Ring and go on to SummerSlam, at least try and help and redirect this title reign. Instead, they chose Mabel, who has even more weaknesses than Kevin Nash in the fact that he's just a complete fucking lard.
Well, one of them is the ability to say no at mealtimes.
Well, yeah. You know, or just walk around with a fucking hard-on after getting Viagra off, Teddy Long?
Yeah.
Right?
That's a great story.
Yeah. Mabel was the wrong choice, and that's why it was useless.
I couldn't disagree at all, in the sense of, yeah, wrong decision for Mabel. Yes, terrible main event. Looked like it should have been on Superstars, not King of the Ring. But again, it's that thing of there was a show-long narrative that had an end game in mind. They had him win. They had him crush the Rocky Balboa guy of the show in Savio Vega, even though no one gave a shit. He beat up Razor. He beat up Kid. I do love the bit where Sermo was doing the incredibly long proclamation of Vince McMahon on commentary. He's like, can we just get this over with, please? He's just completely, at this point, incredulous at how much this is failing.
I understand that line of argument when you say this isn't the most useless. I just think at a time when business isn't great for the company and there are a multitude of wrestlers who are better workers that are nowhere near the show, when you've got the beginnings of Michael's face turn, which is vital to the company going forward, It's a terrible use of him.
Yeah. Even he mouths bullshit after
That's a great, clearly visible bullshit at the end of his 15-minute draw with Karma. Many fans were thinking the same, but I just think it was one of the sort of the quote-unquote big five of the time. Even if there was a purpose there, which there clearly was with Mabel, it is the misuse of other talent why I consider it useless.
In terms of other contenders for this most useless title, we wouldn't have to wait much longer after King of the Ring 95, it turns out. In Your House 3 is totally useless as a show, says SP Man from F4W. The main event was a lame tag title switch that turned to a dusty finish the next night. Bret Hart versus Jean-Pierre Lafitte is a good match, but it meant nothing, and Pierre was buried and gone very shortly after a total nothing show. Three titles on the line, Diesel and Shawn, the dudes with attitudes, against Yoko and Owen. Of course, Owen's not there, they shoehorn Davey into the match. Owen comes out, gets pinned, they reverse the decision the next night on Raw, as if it never happened.
Well,
does this qualify as useless?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like a definition of just a show, kind of getting a show out there. You still, though, I suppose you could argue, yeah, you're trying to showcase your two faces in Shawn and Diesel. So I suppose you can make an argument there, but then the next night it's a dusty finish and it is completely worthless. Then I enjoyed the Bret match, so
yeah, Bret
match
was a lot of fun.
You got a good match in there. So
do you subscribe to the theory that a show has to be devoid of merit for it to kind of qualify for this?
If a show could be completely directionless and have no relevance, but if there's something fun on there, I think it's contributed something. If
you want to pop the tape back in,
yeah, I mean, I think I've seen Bret and the Pirate match a couple of times, so so I mean, in that respect, I'd argue against it, because I think, you know, there's some entertainment value, and I think a show with any entertainment value maybe is, you know, at least got something for fuck's sake.
The whole In Your House concept from the WWF perspective for a good long while was useless.
Am I wrong in thinking that the In Your Houses actually did help there financially? It helped them quite a lot.
A little bit. Not in 95, 96. In the end, what turned it around was, instead of it being a 2 hour, because when it started it was 2 hours and it was cheaper. It was a cheaper price pay-per-view. The idea was lower price entry point will get a lot of people in who wouldn't normally buy pay-per-views. Didn't work. But in 97, when they did Ground Zero at 3 hours and the normal price that every other pay-per-view was at, the same people bought it as would buy the other pay-per-views anyway, so they made a lot more money.
So in the initial
B pay-per-views where they ran one a month.
Not in the initial years.
Not in the initial years.
Yeah. You can tell, with the exceptions of a few matches that are spotted around across the In Your Houses, they didn't quite know how to, adapt their promotional style to a month-by-month basis of like having like the big matches here and there. WCW had been doing it for a little while, so they kind of knew how to get from point to point to point every month. But with WWF, they're used to just working the as you said, the five big shows, and so maybe it seems like from a promotional angle, maybe it took them a little while to kind of adapt it here and there until they got their ground.
It's very interesting just saying that, because it is obviously the speeding up of promotion, the turnaround in pay-per-views and shows and angles in general is something we kind of often lament these days, and this is, I guess, what you're talking about is that transition of the speed of angles. Mm. Yeah, it's just an interesting point. It's almost like the company hadn't caught up with where they were going to go yet. So.
Yeah, yeah.
With regards to In Your House 3, it's difficult to say because of the dusty finish, because of what happens the next night on Raw. This all seems very difficult to try and defend, but in the sense of at least putting emphasis on all three major titles, making them all feel important, you know, the IC champ and the WWF champ want to go for the tag belts. That being said, again, obviously you've got the end result of it, which doesn't amount to a hill of beans. But you do get the good Bret match on there, but it's because so little happens and what could have been of consequence isn't sort of properly followed through, and it's a bait and switch on the fans. I think it does merit its place in the conversation.
And again, since we're in 1995, we might as well linger around this area a little bit more while the waft's in the air. Oh. Edgar the Slats from the UK Fan Forum says, I always contend that In Your House 4 was and forever shall be the worst of all time. When you don't have two of your main stars on the show in Bret and Shawn, it automatically starts to hurt it. Yoko Mabel in the Battle of the Bellies was just horrific. The Guns versus Razor and the Kid was purely there to advance Kid's heel turn, and Dean Douglas was made to look pathetic by winning a belt by forfeit and losing it inside 12 minutes to a guy who already had a match. In Your House 4 is a fucking horrible show. Yoko, Zinner and Mabel is one of the worst pay-per-view matches I've ever seen. The finish itself is just horrific. They just go on the outside and no one gets in. They're not even fighting on the floor. They're just lying around and they just don't make it back in. And at the end, they do the big fat guy hug and the king laughs like it's something great. You can see the fans in the front row doing the whole throw that shit out of here gesture at the ring when it goes to a count out. This just sucks. And it doesn't help that the fans, again, don't seem to go with the company line of thinking here. Again, similar to King of the Ring, where they're booing Fatu. They boo Diesel at points in the main event. The main event just drags and drags and drags. The crowd's not with that long match. You get a DQ finish between Diesel and Davey Boy with Brett on commentary, and it's disastrous buy rate, just the fucking shits all round.
There were several pay-per-views that I was sort of thinking of when you raised this one with us, Liam. This was one of those, and like King of the Ring 95, as I've mentioned on previous podcasts, another pay-per-view that I had on VHS for some ungodly reason. It's really strange that you decide that you're going to run this pay-per-view in Canada. You only have Brett on commentary. Owen's not on the show. Terrible matches. You know, you've got Make a Difference Fatu doing the job in the first match to prim and proper Triple H. The Battle of the Bellies has got to be up there as one of the worst pay-per-view matches in company history. You know, if it's not number one, it's maybe 1B. What stopped me in the end calling this the most useless, you at least you're starting the ball rolling with the 1-2-3 kid heel turn.
That's the saving grace on this show.
No, bear with me. I'm building.
Okay.
You have
on a foundation of sand.
Quicksand. The debut of Goldust, which is consequential. I'm not saying it's a good match with Marty Jannetty. And then as a follow up, you do at least get the angle with Sean. The concussion angle, you know.
What was he wearing, though? You know?
Well, you know, he'd valiantly defended a woman's honour in Syracuse somewhere, at least. That's the story he told.
Against the National Guard.
Against the National Guard, yeah, exactly. It helps to get some sympathy on Sean, which they can use going forward. You know, Tell Me a Live video had plenty of those little snippets from that period in. So those little things, whilst not earth-shattering by any means, just about stop me calling it the most useless. And I emphasise, just about. Just barely.
It was heel-heel.
It was heel-heel, non-finish, the heels hug at the end.
That's pretty useless.
It doesn't get much more useless than that. Bono from the UK Fan Forum votes for the No Mercy UK-only pay-per-view, which was horrendous, if I remember rightly. You, in fact, do. The Clint from the UK Fan Forum also chimed in on this and said, although Austin vs. Taker vs. Triple H wasn't too bad, this even could be a contender for the single worst pay-per-view card ever. Goldberg vs. Tiger Ali Singh, The Brood against the Acolytes and Viscera, Draws vs. Steve Blackman, Kane vs. Midian, which ends in a DQ, Tori vs. Nicole Bass, X-Pac vs. Shane, and Billy Gunn pinning Mankind. You should see Carl's face. Plus, keep in mind, this event only ran for 2 hours and 15 minutes, and the show opened with a 15-minute promo with the Ministry. Safe to say, I was quite pissed off about spending $12.95 for this crap on box office at the time. The only two matches they announced for the show was the main event in Shane vs. X-Pac. I wonder why. It's up there with the UK Rampage 93 show as the worst televised shows the WWE has ever done. KJH from Pro Wrestling Only also said No Mercy 99 in the UK. Just look at the card. Plus, Undertaker was in his struggling to walk Ministry of Darkness phase, so the main event was a lot more boring than it sounds on paper too. This is one that us UK viewers and listeners can relate to far more than the Americans, I'm sure. Although, you can see this on the network now, can't you? So, this show's just...
It's only $9.99, folks.
I would have paid $9.99 to not ever witness the Goldberg Tiger Ali Singh. That was the opener. The funny thing that makes this show even worse than it sounds on paper is that the heels win almost every single match until the Austin match.
What I want to know is why the hell in 1999 Goldberg and Tiger Ali Singh are still employed with the company?
Tiger Ali Singh's one of these weird ones where, like, I've been watching a lot of 98 lately. I've watched it all live at the time. I have no recollection of Tiger Ali Singh being there this much, and he's there all the time even at this point.
You could say this about almost any UK pay-per-view from that period. You know, insert Rebellion whatever year, Insurrection whatever year you want to throw in. They were treated as irrelevant because they were basically just UK only pay-per-views, and it was just a way to...
They were house shows on television.
Yeah, and it was just a bit of a way to get a bit more extra money out of us UK fans whilst they were doing their European loop.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it is absolutely useless, but it's a glorified... I personally don't even count it as a pay-per-view because it's a glorified house show, as you say, for us suckers who starved on starved on wrestling and they just fleeced us.
Thanks, Vince.
But you know, a shame on us for expecting it if you expected anything else. So I suppose in one respect, yeah, you could, because technically it was a pay-per-view. But me personally, because I don't treat it as the significance of a proper pay-per-view, in quotations, I'm always discounted them.
I'm very similar in the sense of when I think pay-per-view, I think, you know, sort of a global show without wanting to be too pretentious and sort of too grandiose about it. You think a show with, you know, millions upon millions that people around the world can see, whereas in this case it's just us as an island off the main coast of Europe. So no, I don't consider it a genuine pay-per-view.
Move across here to some WCW pay-per-views. Linus from the UK Fan Forum says, I can't believe no one has suggested WCW New Blood Rising. Is it because it's actually that hilariously bad? Ernest Miller beating the Great Muta, Judy Bagwell on a forklift, rip off the camouflage match, which is just terrible with her.
I'm sorry, wait, hold on a sec. Can you repeat the first one again?
Ernest Miller beats the Great Muta.
What?!
Major Guns versus Miss Hancock, terrible. Vampiro and Muta versus Chronic, and the worked shoot between Nash, Steiner, and Goldberg. It was bad. That was absolutely atrocious.
Oh, Mister won't go up for the powerbomb.
Yeah, and the ensuing commentary is just absolutely cringeworthy. It's about how professional Nash is. Although, just in terms of a useless pay per view, I'd put this one back on just to see Goldberg say "fuck you" to Vince Russo now and again, just because that entertains me.
Yeah, I think we all sort of can vicariously live through that Goldberg moment. But don't forget, Liam, how the strip off the camouflage match ended. The tease of a miscarriage for Stacey Keibler.
Yeah, not abortion.
Yeah, what a classy guy Roos was. No, the pay-per-view should have been aborted.
This also has Lance Storm in Canada doing that horrible Canadian rules match where they just fucking made him look like a joke. Somehow, the Canadian fans still pop for it, especially when Brett comes out at the end. But at the very end, Booker T beats Jeff Jarrett. And the fans are just, you can just see, walking out the building in absolute disgust, throwing crap at the ring at babyface champion Booker T.
All I'll say is, I can always find 2 minutes of use out of anything with Miss Hancock on, so...
A point I've got to make here, because it really is a real pet peeve of mine over the years when it comes to this show. You've got Lance Storm as a guy, you've tried to put a bit of momentum behind, you've got him winning the three titles. You then have this awful Canadian rules match. You know, you've got this chance to, I'm not going to say create a complete, you know, superstar out of this world or anything, but a chance to cement a guy as a real credible player within the company at a time when you desperately, desperately need it.
Anyone,
exactly, anyone. And then you go and do this to him in Canada. You just bring Brett, you just casually have him waltz out. You know, surely the idea would have been promote an appearance by Bret Hart. Maybe get a few more buys. No, we'll just have him wander out anyway.
Bad News Girl from TPWW Forum says, WCW Great American Bash 1999. That was the moment where I knew the company was done. Rick Steiner beat Sting in a Falls Count Anywhere match where Sting was attacked by dogs.
God, I forgot about that.
Flair beat Piper via DQ with the winner becoming president. Flair and Piper had already been trading that title back and forth. Nash beat Savage by DQ in the main event when Sid interfered in the main event, which already gives it points in the negative field for me. But we were also treated to Mikey Whipwreck versus Van Hammer in a bonus match. AKA, someone at the booking meeting forgot the pay-per-views usually run longer than an hour and a half, so we're just going to throw this match on. This was kind of a staple. You saw this a bit throughout 99 WCW View. Actually, tend to be Mikey Whipwreck involved in them too. There's one with Scotty Riggs. Mike Spring Stampede, as well. This show is absolutely terrible, and I don't know if you want to give any points at all to Sid debuting on this show in terms of not being useless, but I hate this show.
I give it negative points.
And I hate Sid.
Yeah, we give it negative points because it's Sid. If by the summer of 99 you don't know how worthless Sid is, then you have no business booking wrestling.
I will say that somebody, when we did our Saving WCW in October 99, I forget the fella's name, but somebody said that we need to justify why we wanted to get rid of Sid, because he was such a key player in the company at the time, and his feud with Goldberg was doing well.
I want him to justify why we should justify it, quite frankly. He's fucking Sid. Just refresh remember, what was the main event of the show?
This was Savage, back in his phase of not being able to move very much, and Kevin Nash for the WCW title ends by DQ with Sid running in and attacking Nash.
Yeah, that's
And also on the useless scale from this period of time, 1 month later, Jingus from Pro Wrestling Only says, Bash at the Beach 99, single worst booked show I've ever seen in my life. They fucked everything up from start to finish. At least the usual suspects like Heroes of Wrestling had the excuse of a horrible roster, a skeleton crew of washed up has-beens, or anonymous nobodies, being booked and directed by amateurs who clearly never run a real wrestling promotion before. WCW managed to slit its own throat while employing dozens and dozens of the best workers, brightest minds, and biggest stars in the industry. This is the show with the Junkyard Invitational Battle Royal, as well.
The injures half the roster.
And a tag team match main event for the world title.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, well, that's one of my favourite wrestling tropes that was brought in during this period of time. The so it's Savage and Sid, that dynamic duo, against Nash and Sting, where even in the introduction to the show, they're talking about how Sting can pin his own partner, Nash, to be the WCW champion, which, what? Yeah, I don't know. They lost 15 million that year. Do you need an explanation?
Definitely, I'd say useless, but maybe stupidest one up there of the stupidest pay-per-views as well, maybe. So, hard to argue, I think. Hard to defend this one.
Completely ill thought out. As we say, it legitimately hurt several wrestlers at the time. Now, you could argue some of those maybe deserve to be hurt, but still, you know, the object of the company is not to have them legitimately hurt one way or another. You have this convoluted main event,
yeah,
which Liam obviously referenced there with the Sting ability to pin your own partner, which is just... And bear in mind, Russo isn't even there at that point.
Nah.
Yeah. And the fact that we mentioned Within Your House 3 and the fact of the dusty finish and the inconsequential nature of it because of what they do the following night. Well, the following night on Nitro, Hogan comes out.
Of course he does. Savage's got the belt. What else do you expect? Yeah.
Babyface Hulk Hogan returns, Eric Bischoff's on commentary, and Hogan's the champion again.
I will say, if there was a defence to be had for both of these bashes, Great American and At the Beach, it's the fact that there's a very fun series of matches around this time with the Jersey Triad against Benoit and Saturn that have two matches on this over the course of these shows. They're very, very fun. So again, and that's, they're worth watching. Bash at the Beach does have Dean Malenko doing a job to David Flair, which is quite criminal. So, again, pretty bad.
Useless, stupid, and now that you've reminded me about that one result, also offensive.
Yeah, I mean, I guess mid-99 onwards from WCW was all useless because it didn't turn the company around.
Yeah, touche.
Similar to my, I was thinking maybe like every TNA pay-per-view of all time apart from two, because no one ever paid to view them, so what's the fucking point?
Well, actually, I should say this entire podcast was inspired by the fact that Slammiversary happened last week, which actually is a fantastic candidate for most useless pay-per-view of all time. Speaking of terribly offensive shows here, let's get to the elephant in the room. Number one, WWF fan from TPWW Forums, he says, December to Dismember in 2006 is the first one that comes to mind. Even with a good tag match between the Hardys and M&M, the brand was nowhere near ready for a pay-per-view. Add to that the horrible booking of the Chamber match, and it was just a disaster in every way. WWE has run some pretty bad pay-per-views over the past 10 years or so, but I don't think any have been as unremarkable. Dominator, also from TPWW Forum, says, it's got to be December to Dismember. I call it a horrible joke of a pay-per-view, but that would be an insult to horrible jokes worth being remembered. Glenrick Pilchards from UK Fan Forum says, December to Dismember was the drizzling shits. The only match worth any note was Hardy's M&M. There was hardly any build to this pay-per-view, and some of the matches booked would have been a piss break at a house show, never mind a pay-per-view. The biggest disaster from the event was the Elimination Chamber. There were only two guys who were remotely over in the match, CM Punk, who was eliminated first, by the other over-participant, RVD. As soon as RVD was eliminated, the match became a plodding mess, which resulted in Lashley winning the belt, which was about as popular as David Arquette winning the WCW title. Chokeout from UK Fan Forum says December to Dismember, any pay-per-view that features Matt Stryker versus Balls Mahoney and Daivari versus Tommy Dreamer needs to be on this list. Oh, and they advertised Sabu for the Chamber, then wrote him out and replaced him with Bob Holly. there's still more here. Nightro from WrestlingForum.com says, Vince took a huge dump on ECW's legacy with this show, and we've all heard about the infamous problems and disagreements between Vince and Heyman when it came to booking it. Even though Vince left the responsibility of putting the show together to Heyman, he shit-canned Paul's ideas about having CM Punk eliminate Big Show first by tapping out to the Anaconda Vice, which everyone would have loved and everybody loved backstage apart from Vince. He had Sabu replacing the chain by Holly. When the show failed as expected, it was Heyman that wrongfully took the blame for it, leading to Heyman quitting the company and going home. Eminem vs. Hardy was the only decent match on the pay-per-view, but even that wasn't enough to save this from being a total abomination.
I think it's almost like poetic, I think, that I go with this option, because when we were doing the best non-Mania pay-per-views of all time, my favourite pay-per-view of all time is ECW One Night Stand, just for the memories it brought back and the nostalgia. Definitely, hands down, the worst and also the most useless pay-per-view. The build was ridiculous. Only two matches were actually kind of advertised for the show. It was done at very short notice. Anybody who wants to try and use the Hardys and Eminem as a pro for this show and as a saving grace, Jeff Hardy, who's the Intercontinental Champion, and Nitro were Raw wrestlers, and Matt Hardy and I believe Joey Mercury as well were SmackDown wrestlers. Okay, none of these guys are wrestling on ECW shows. I think they wrestled on one. I think maybe just the week before to try and promote this match. So to try and say that that match was useful, it wasn't, because it wasn't promoting the brand that they were on. Then immediately you just have a run of abysmal matches between, and I'm going to say it, washed up ECW wrestlers, not superstars or legends, versus people who had no business being on that brand. You know, he's already mentioned Balls Mahoney versus Matt Stryker, Daivari versus Tommy Dreamer, which Daivari went over on Tommy Dreamer. He beats him, right? Now, I know we have.
With the tight Tommy. Right. With holding the jeans for the win.
Right. But you have to admit that even that's a little bit stupid,
even
right?
I find
but
that a little
that's,
bit
that's much. Ridiculous, right?
No,
then,
it isn't.
You know, you get Takai and Elijah Burke versus who?
The FBI.
The FBI, which is whatever. And then you get the...
Let's not forget the real stinkeroo.
Right, and then you get like the absolute beauty match of Mike Knox and Kelly versus Kevin Thorne and Ariel. I watched this match and then I've never had a desire to watch it again until yesterday in preparation for this. It brought back memories of me watching these shows and remembering that Mike Knox was a huge part of these shows. And I was like, who the fuck is this guy? It's like, Knox is fucking useless. And it's like, and Kelly Kelly's just awful. And then we get to the main event, right? This is what the whole show is going to be based on. This is what the whole new ECW is going to be based off. So you look at the participants, right, of the original match, right? You have Fat Fuck Big Show as the champion. That's a good start. You have Roided Up Test, okay?
You have a hideous growth hormone girth.
Yeah, and back acne, where if you joined up all the dots together, it would come up as a bucket and spade on his back. You got Bobby Lashley, and then you have CM Punk, who's over, and two ECW originals in Sabu and Rob Van Dam. They eliminate Sabu to bullshit chants from the crowd, right? And then you're thinking, like, well, okay, obviously because Paul Heyman's got maybe a hand in this, they're gonna do something good. They're gonna do like a swerve. No, instead they choose fucking spark plug Bobby. Okay, oh, Bob Holly.
Don't be hating on Bob Cole.
No, still Bob Holly, still wearing the gear that Brock Lesnar crushed him in about 2 years earlier, and this fucking fuck just turns up out of nowhere stinking the place up. So you're thinking, well, this match is even fucking worse. They then proceed to eliminate CM Punk first, again to bullshit chants. Then, well, luckily Bob Holly's out next, and then fucking Rob Van Dam as well. And that you can just instantly see the crowd just die. They die a death. And to make matters worse, there's still another 40 seconds on the clock. Right, so Test is standing in the ring with his dick in his hand. He's just standing there. He's just looking at the two participants. Big Show's just like, got his like face up against the glass. And he just counting, and the crowd's just sitting there. Just like absolutely deflated. And he just get this lame ass Bobby Lashley smashing the table through, which is the only usage of the table, because there was weapons in this Extreme Elimination Chamber, which they barely used.
You should open a vineyard with the amount of sour grapes you've got over there. I don't know if you can like divorce like the ECW sentiment from the pay-per-view itself, to be honest.
It's called ECW December to December.
Yeah, but come on.
It's a really hard divorce.
I mean, it's 2006, so grow the fuck up, dude. At least they put a new guy over.
Oh, come on. You can't even say it seriously.
Hold on. I understand G's passion here.
I do too.
And I don't disagree with the sentiment with regards to the show. It is a terrible show. When it comes to the...
It's like Superstars of Wrestling, yeah. Isn't it? Carl, Sunlight Submission, the show you used to listen to, I'll never forget when they opened the show up talking about how this is the December to fucking forget, and just tore this show a new asshole. It was awesome.
And fully deserved. I think the when it comes to the Hardys and Nitro Mercury, I think that's a bit sort of insider baseball, and we talk about ECW brand. By that point, G, it's already, you know, WWE C-team. is what it may as well be. The brand's, or as anything different, is already dead. It's already been. It's gone. This was very much just the burial of the ECW corpse. Yeah. It is a terrible pay-per-view in terms of the purpose of it going anywhere. Yeah, I'm not going to genuinely try and defend Bobby Lashley as a champion, because, you know, he's gone from the company within, what, half a year?
A little bit earlier than that.
Yeah. So he's not around much longer, so it doesn't help create a new star, really. And that Mania match is obviously all about Vince and the Donald. Negative stars, absolutely. So I think it's worthy of the conversation.
Yeah, this is the shit. Oh, G, like you said, we're watching this yesterday.
Yeah.
Just the very symbolic sign of the chamber coming down and the fans just sitting like they just smelled a fart.
Oh, God,
like,
yeah.
Arms folded. Just dead inside, watching the chamber fall down.
There's an actual shot in the show. The director actually cuts to a shot of the cage lowering, and you can see every person in the audience has sat there with their arms crossed, with like sour grapes.
You know what they're thinking? They're all thinking, oh man, we're so fucking stupid. I don't see how you can call a show useless when Tommy Dreamer gets embarrassed, quite frankly. Thumbs up for me.
Moving on to another candidate now. CTX Russo Mark from the UK Fan Forum, a name that raises my eyebrows, says, Great American Bash 2004 always sticks out in my mind as it was one of the last WWE pay-per-views I watched as a full-time viewer. Absolute shit from almost top to bottom. Just looked up the card and it's full of matches that would barely be acceptable on SmackDown. Luther Reigns versus Charlie Haas, Hardcore Holly versus Mordecai, Kenzo Suzuki versus Billy Gunn. I remember the bull rope match between Eddie and JBL being a complete letdown compared to the bloodbath they had at Judgment Day, and then you had the fucking Dudleys in the main event. And Maluko from TBWW. Oh yeah, this is the Concrete Crypt show where Paul Bearer meets his demise.
He dies in Ready Breck.
Maluko from TBWW says the same show. Luther Reigns, Charlie Haas, Kenzo, Billy Gunn, Mordecai versus Bob Core, and Sable versus Tori Wilson. Followed by a main event of The Undertaker versus the Dudleys. The show goes off the air with Paul Bearer seemingly dead, with The Undertaker murdering him by covering him in concrete. The fact that Mordecai, Reigns, and Suzuki flopped so badly after, when they were the three guys supposed to be getting firm pushes in this show's mid-card, makes it even more forgettable and very much so useless. This is also the show where JBL wins the WWE title from Eddie Guerrero, much to my chagrin at the time.
You remember there was a time where Mordecai was being brought in for a feud with The Undertaker.
Yeah, and Eddie Guerrero too.
And Eddie Guerrero, yeah. It was pretty much out the window after that match with Holly.
That one, this was it, wasn't it?
He jobbed to Mysterio on SmackDown, and then that was it.
But this was the match where Vince saw, watched this match, and he just thought, this guy, no.
Yeah, you then wouldn't see him again until he came back as the vampire in the Cutting Edge ECW that he loved so much. Awful show. If I'm not mistaken, isn't this the one where they've got the backstage skits as well with Tori Wilson in a pool?
In the hot tub, yeah.
In the hot tub with is it Spike?
Funaki's there.
And Billy Kidman, who has to pretend to perv on his own wife. So very bizarre. I think that series of Bash pay-per-views was generally terrible. I don't recall...
Three really bad ones in a row.
I don't recall any of them being any good, but awful main event. Which had a terrible build with Heyman stealing the urn and an Undertaker being sort of obedient, because it was all just bullshit for the year 2004.
Yeah,
frankly.
It was terrible.
Bull Rope match was just... I remember watching it at the time being utterly depressed.
Oh, I was so crestfallen when Guerrero lost.
I was absolutely gutted that he'd lost. We can talk about pay-per-views having consequences. Well, it had the consequence of a close to a year-long JBL title run, which nobody cared about.
And actually beat Kevin Nash for the worst drawing champion in history.
Had a used to big Kev then.
the Bull Rope match... I was actually enjoying as I was watching it right up until the finish, where, as you said, it was this guy who's come out of nowhere, who I never considered, he wasn't even a mid-carder. He wins the belt off Eddie, and I didn't know the backstage story as to why, you know, the numerous ones that they say about Eddie
was cracking.
Yeah, he was cracking, he was struggling after all this time of trying to get into that position. I don't know what was worse, whether it was Eddie Guerrero losing or the flummoxed look that was on my face after the Undertaker match, of just like, oh, why the fuck did he do that?
Yeah, that made any sense.
Did they ever explain it?
No, of course not.
Oh, okay. It wasn't just because I stopped watching. I don't know. It's just because no one knew.
I'm not sure it was even referenced following the pay-per-view.
No,
I think it was pretty much just forgotten about. Rightly so.
A real SummerSlam 94 taker, faker, kind of, okay, let's just pretend that never happened kind of a deal.
But I will say, if I can just ask the table this one, because G, you mentioned there that you didn't know about the backstage stuff and Eddie cracking up. Now, I wasn't a religious reader of the dirt sheets by any means at the time. Sure, Liam and Kieran probably did, as they both nod, hopefully.
Yep. We were observer readers at the time, believe.
That being said, did either of you genuinely think that Guerrero would lose the belt to JBL? Because I never saw that coming in a month or Sundays.
Not a prayer. Not a prayer.
Yeah, and that, I think that's what it was. It was so abrupt. So we're talking about useless. Okay, so they switched the belt, as you say, as a, you know, that's a use. But when it's the lowest drawing champion of all time, that's pretty fucking useless.
Point well made.
It's one of those things, isn't it? It's one thing to have consequences, but when it's negative consequences.
Yeah. Bobby Dazzler from the UK Fan Forum says, King of the Ring 94, surely. Piper versus Lawler main event, new generation indeed. IRS versus Mabel, and of course, Art Donovan. I couldn't call this the most useless pay-per-view because it helped as a vehicle for Owen Hart and the storyline there to give him some steam for the SummerSlam match with Brett in the cage. Not a great show, but I wouldn't put this in discussion for most useless or worse, I don't think, personally.
No.
Very enjoyable Owen versus Kid match, too, as brief as that is.
Yeah.
I agree. It's not useless because it serves a purpose for continue the build of Owen, whilst it wasn't a brilliant drawing feud at the box office, was an enjoyable feud that you can, you know, we talk about things you can go back and watch, and that certainly lends itself there. You've got the added element of Neidhart being thrown into the mix, and yeah, I know it's Jim Neidhart in the year 1994, but it ties into that Hart family motif that they would go on to really play up at SummerSlam with the family in the crowd and that sort of thing. That's not to say this pay-per-view doesn't have its problems, that main event being the prime example, and also Art Donovan. I can just leave it there, Art Donovan. I don't need to say any more on that. We talk about consequences for pay-per-views in terms of whether or not they're useless. I think there are positive outcomes to this pay-per-view, specifically Owen Hart, which is why I wouldn't put it in that category.
Bret Hart, Diesel, as well, is a really good match. Yes, the main event with Lawler, Roddy Piper's is ill-advised. Not necessarily that ill-advised that it's on the show, but I think ill-advised that in particular that it was in the main event. I think that served a purpose that was useful in terms of the development of Diesel at that time, even though we all know when he was talking about consequences what that ended up being with Diesel. He challenges for the world title, look strong against the world champion. Owen winning, like, served a purpose because they needed to legitimise someone who, whilst he obviously had a much bigger win, it seems, at WrestleMania 10 against Bret, they still needed to kind of legitimise him as a challenger. More than just a fluke, absolutely, because up until then he was a lower carder, a tag team guy, so they needed to establish him, and if they just tried to ride on the WrestleMania win, that wouldn't have been enough, so they needed to give the King of the Ring. He's probably, the of all the King of the Ring winners, the person that most needed to win the King of the Ring that he won. Art Donovan, there's some sort of kind of like car crash where you can't turn away, or I guess you can't fold your ears to it. There's something entertaining in how bad he is.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everyone. Owen needed it. I never thought, to be honest, out of any of the shine they tried to give Owen, he ever got the maximum out of it. I don't think anyone would really argue with that. Maybe his own personality kind of held him back a little bit. But that being said, the Owen Bret feud was still, you know, one of the standout things of the year, and you can't call it useless.
Moving along here, Suplex Sinner from the UK Fan Forum says, Judgment Day 2003 is one of the worst ever, I think. This was during a time when, despite having a lot of talent, in quotes, on the roster, the writing and booking and execution was so haphazard and illogical that it turned people off wrestling forever. It might be harsh to say that this was the watermark, but for me it was just one terrible pay-per-view too far. A total nothing Austin Bischoff segment. A tag match that didn't make any sense. Triple H Nash is the worst I think I've ever seen. A clusterfuck of an Intercontinental title battle royal. It was unbearable. And the tipping point? The fact that Lesnar's show in a stretcher match was good enough and fun enough to further the angle. And that made me angry. How can 2.5 hours of pay-per-view be so terrible and a decent match is thrown out right at the death? 90% of the angles and matches didn't mean anything, and the execution was the worst I'd seen in that diabolical 2002-2004 era. Bad as this is, and there's a lot of bad on this show, that the Triple H Nash stuff is particularly gutless, but the stretch match with Lesnar and Big Show has gotten a few watches out of me, so in terms of being a completely useless show, I sympathise with him, but at the same time, I'm leaning towards a no on this one.
Yeah,
much the same from me. It's always fun watching Lesnar throw a big show around.
Yeah, there's the sound of Taz calling Lesnar the baddest man on the planet when he jumps off the forklift. It rings in my ears. I can't get behind this one, sadly. Stevie G, 1980 from UK Fan Forum, says, "For Brawl 98, I even found Bash 91 better than this. Bulldog and Anvil versus Alex Wright and Disco Inferno. Ernest Miller," there's that name again, "versus Norman Smiley. Two advertised matches in Jericho versus Goldberg being a joke, even though that was funny, and Rick Steiner versus Scott Steiner going to a no contest due to them recycling the Bagwell injury angle." And this is the deal where they put him in the ambulance and then Rick Steiner turns his back and they jump out fine and then beat the shit out of him. Like the many month ongoing storyline of how Scott was trying to dodge a match with Rick. Then they fuck over the War Games match just to further the Warrior Hogan angle, and everyone has to lie there unconscious due to Warrior's smoke, and Stevie fucking Ray is in the main event. Utter bullshit pay-per-view. Due to the star power in the main event, the other matches felt like a really bad Thunder. And there are some low watermarks for War Game, but this might be... This isn't even a War Games match.
Yeah, it was a strange format, if I remember rightly.
Three teams, every man for himself, first pin wins.
Absolute clusterfuck of a main event. A really, really bad undercard. I can't stress that enough. Really bad.
I see that there's one thing of note on this show to me. Raven and Saturn have a very forgotten...
Oh, that's this
and
show,
very underrated.
Yeah.
Really great match on this show.
The show I underrated and forgotten is I'd forgotten that it was on this show.
And that speaks to how cack the rest of the card is for me.
Yeah, it... You know, one swallow doesn't make a summer sort of thing.
It's... Or a girlfriend, as Kieran said a couple
absolutely.
Weeks ago.
Absolutely. The Warrior stuff with the smoke is almost comically horrific.
I heard it was mustard gas.
The amount of time fucking Nash laid on the mat, you might have been.
This match was on my best of Fall Brawl tape. That's what happened.
Who the fuck put these tapes together? Stevie Wonder.
I'll have to find a match listing of these tapes for you to read. This is my segue into WCW before it came onto Channel 5. Where it got even better from 99 onwards. Just awful. I mean, just some of the people involved. You mentioned Stevie Ray.
Just
in every way.
Stevie Ray just kept popping up on TV.
Yeah, he was just on everything. Yeah,
yep. Him and his fruit booty.
And Warrior, just that whole shit where it's just he appears in the ring with the cloud of smoke, then disappears, and then comes running out from the entranceway, and it's just bullshit. He's chasing after Hogan. He kicks the corner of the cage in. Then as he leaps out, he slices his leg to the point when he's actually chasing Hogan to the back. He's limping and hobbling after him.
I think I'm sure he tears a muscle in his leg, doesn't he, jumping out of the cage?
Yeah. Something that wasn't mentioned there, which is another black eye for this pay-per-view. If I'm not mistaken, this is the show where Davey has his severe back injury because of that fucking trapdoor.
In terms of potentially not useless, DDP winning this match sets up DDP versus Goldberg at Halloween Havoc. So does that give it any points in terms of that match at least had a purpose in theoretically setting up the two big matches for Halloween Havoc?
It could have if Hogan and Warrior didn't run so long that the pay-per-view afterwards ended up losing money.
Big Vic from TPWW Forum says, WWE Battleground 2013. This is due in part to Hell in a Cell being right after, and the bookers are unsure over any other way to keep the Orton-Bryan feud going without going to the non-finish of Big Show attacking them both. No other titles changed hands. Very forgettable pay-per-view overall. Most unnecessary show in WWE history, in my opinion. And we got one more vote for this here from Matt B 425 from F4W, who says, this was the height of Vince's Daniel Bryan sucks and I'm going to show you why, mate. The main event for the vacant title ended in Big Show screwing over Bryan by knocking out the ref just as Bryan was about to tap out Orton. A heel ref being brought in, and Big Show suddenly having a change of heart and knocking him out as well, leading to the match ending in a no contest. It was after this show that I started to realise that Vince's legacy wasn't so much as Steven Spielberg as it was George Lucas. Those who have read the secret history of Star Wars or have watched the prequels will understand.
I would say that is an excellent suggestion for the topic on the basis that when you mentioned the pay-per-view and the year, Liam, I couldn't think of a single thing that had happened on it.
Yeah, when you mentioned that, and unfortunately, and again, this is one of those common themes that we always talk about, the trappings of the last 10 years, where so many of these shows just blend together, bleed together. The only, again, on this show, the Rhodes brothers wrestled the Shield and beat them to get their jobs back after they've been fired, and that's a pretty good match. So, not a big fan of them beating the Shield, but there's a narrative purpose for this show, and it's a good match too.
There is, and Dusty's tiers are fantastic. Really, really hams it up. It's brilliant. You know, disappointing in the sense of them going over the Shield, and the fact that they pissed away that momentum for the Rhodes brothers within a matter of weeks.
I think the main event is absolutely quintessential. An example, the Brian Orton match of a useless pay per view match.
Yeah, totally.
Again, as we said with one of the earlier ones, just a match to do a match because they got a pay per view, and it's absolutely the horrible, horrible finish and completely worthless.
Steve J. Rogers from Pro Wrestling Only gets the one here that was inevitably going to come up. Heroes of Wrestling, we mentioned it earlier on. An early shot at cashing in at the start of the nostalgia craze, but without any rhyme or reason for any of the matches except for a convoluted day of show angles. Never mind Jake's performance during the whole night. It's one thing when a local promotion running a one-off legends show, but this seemed intended on becoming almost a seniors tour sort of gimmick, hence the angles as opposed to this guy was a legendary heel, this guy was a legendary face, let's have a good exhibition. And Yashimaga from WrestlingForum.com also says, Heroes of Wrestling, I still have a VHS copy that I taped live when it aired, and at 9 years old when I recorded it, I knew it was the biggest steaming pile of turds ever produced. You got Jake Roberts at least a 30 rack and an 8-ball deep, and Yokozuna closing in on £1,100, among other things. It was great if you're the type that enjoys car accidents and train wrecks, though.
At least from watching that show, I was reminded of the rules for blackjack.
Drive 21.
I'm loath to say useless pay-per-view because I found it, you know, comically bad. You know, if you're into a bit of Schadenfreude and laughing at other people's misfortunes, then this really is the pay-per-view for you.
The thing with this is, and the reason why, and granted it is one of the worst shows of all time, the Bushwhackers versus Sheik and Volkov is legendary -5 stars material. Yeah, it's as bad as it sounds. There's a good Tully Blanchard promo on this show, but it feels like I'm clutching at straws here to try and justify it. To me, though, because this is always a standalone, isolated show, it was never supposed to have any wider relevance anyway, so what you're expecting, yeah, there was nothing good on the show, and yeah, it might as well have never happened, but even if it was a very good show, it might as well have never happened, right? It was just, it's a nostalgic retread. Can we really, and to me, if this discussion is worst pay-per-view, this is high on the list. If the discussion is useless and we're talking about wider relevance, this has a limit on it anyway. Am I wrong in saying this, or?
No, I don't think so, because to backtrack slightly to our comments earlier about a UK-only pay-per-view, and why we never considered those as any genuine contenders in this discussion, I think that falls into that same category because there's no wider relevance or wider context to it. Whilst acknowledging how bad it is, I can't say I ever gave it any genuine consideration for this debate.
Callum1993 from the UK Fan Forum says, I'll go with Super Brawl 2000, which featured such classics as The Wall versus The Demon, Big T, who was fat as fuck at the time, against Booker T for the rights to use the letter T, Tank Abbott versus Big Al in a leather jacket on a pole match, Ric Flair versus Terry Funk with both guys well past their prime, Nobbs versus Bigelow in a god-awful hardcore match, and featured an unadvertised appearance from James Brown. Air Raid from the UK Fan Forum jumps on this one too and says it's the most useless pay-per-view I've ever watched. The lineup on paper is absolutely anemic, and in the watching is sheer misery. This show is a scathing indictment of the way WCW had been run, and a brutal donkey punch of a snapshot at the state they'd let themselves get into. There is so little going on of interest, it's untrue. The world title match is either insultingly short for a pay-per-view main event, or mercifully short considering it was so lame. And conversely, Hogan vs. Luger, in 2000, really, felt like it went on forever despite being about the same length. On the other hand, Flair Funk, in 2000, really, actually did go on forever. I'm sure it's still going on. The entire undercard is loaded with guys who wouldn't have had a sniff on a pay-per-view 2 years earlier. Mind-numbingly boring, with no redeemable qualities, no reason to ever take it out the box again. Not one. The best way I could summarise it would be that my nightmare card for worst show ever would be this card, plus Bushwhackers Beverly's from Rumble 92. Not exactly a ringing endorsement for Super Brawl 2000.
No, it really isn't. And just to sort of rub salt in the wounds is the fact that pregnant Ahmed Johnson actually beats Booker T for the rights to use the word T. Oh, so for the next 2 months, Booker's walking around just being called Booker.
This was during the real fucking horrific period.
Yeah.
And granted, it was between two more horrific periods, but the interim between Russo Reigns of Terror, this where they just they didn't know what to do, so they're going back to Old Faithful is what it felt
like. It's very much, it screams it's holding pattern, isn't it? It's just the fact that the holding pattern is so fucking abysmal.
Yeah,
it's a terrible show. You could also throw in the follow-up uncensored.
Yeah, it's not much better.
The following month with the Yappapaya strap match.
At least it's on, it was mentioned there, but Tank Abbott, Big Al, is hilarious to watch. It's so... Who the fuck was this Big Al guy?
I don't know. He sort of... He lingered around for a couple more months because he...
Did
was,
he?
Yeah, because he was involved in the Jimmy Hart Man Cow match at Spring Stampede 2000 for all seven of us who can
Man
remember
cow.
That. Not just the fact that it's a bad pay-per-view. I mentioned there the word holding pattern.
Yeah.
So in that context, it very much screams of a pay-per-view that may as well have not existed.
But I'm glad it did, because that way we get the Tank Abbott knife to the throat, I could fucking kill you moment on live pay-per-view. So,
the only thing I'll say is the only match I can remember is the Battle of the Tees, and it's a shame Booker didn't win, because if Booker won, then Big T could call himself Man Cow, but
he's been big.
It has been called Big.
At least there's truth in advertising. Moving on to one that's a commonly held one, and we had to get to it at some point here. SJ5522 from the UK Fan Forum says, WrestleMania 9 was fucking abysmal. One decent IC title match spoiled by a shitty ending, as was the case with pretty much every match on this card. A terrible doink crush match. Ramon and Backlund do nothing. Gonzalez stinks at the place. Hogan being a cunt. The worst... The weird ass setting and costumes, terrible segments, the whole show makes me think, whose third birthday party is it today? Had I been viewing it as it ran, it could have easily put me off the sport. And Socrates from F4W, Socrates, says, Mania 9 to me is still the most useless pay-per-view in history. The only two decent matches had bullshit finishes and the main event didn't matter 5 seconds later. We had Hulk Hogan coming out to heroically win the title from the evil foreigner to the thrill of no one. We had the IC title kept on a count-out, the tag title kept on a DQ, we had perhaps the worst and the take a WrestleMania match ever, which also ended in a DQ. Useless shit.
If we were going to do our own selections, this was going to be mine.
Yeah.
I think so many of these shows, and the kind of the era I was expecting actually more from was like the Cena era, where it was, you know, same old, but at least with that, it's kind of perpetuation of whether we like it or not, he was their top guy. This wasn't only stagnant, it was regressive. No one on the whole show gained anything from this, apart from Hogan, who I didn't actually gain from it, you know. Match by match, no good matches. Sean and Tatanka, you got the unbeaten guy against the IC champ, and neither of them gets put over. You know, Sean doesn't get the heat from beating the unbeaten guy. The unbeaten guy doesn't... Okay, he says unbeaten, but in the shittiest way. Luger beats Perfect and means nothing. Obviously, the Taker, Gonzalez, was fucking atrocious. And then, to really round it all off, the Hogan debacle at the end is just... It was useless on the night, and it was even more useless a couple of months' time when Hoagie was gone. Hurts Brett, hurts Yoko, just a bunch of losers.
just, at a time when they were trying to make stars,
yeah,
you know?
And they not only made none, they actually devalued any existing guys. So, yeah, this is agree wholeheartedly.
Interesting, though, because we were talking about what defines useless car. I know you have a contrarian opinion here.
Yeah, a slightly. It's not to defend the show by any means. I agree with pretty much word for word everything that Kieran said there. I think the emailer referenced a good IC title match, and I always think that that IC title match is not... I don't want to say put on a pedestal, but it's given far more credit than it really deserves. In terms of that, how we define useless, I'm thinking more along those lines of something that could have easily just not happened and we'd be none the wiser type of thing, where admittedly, whilst it's incredibly regressive and the perfect example of what not to do when you're trying to create new stars, I can't say it wasn't without some far-reaching consequences.
Noteworthy occurrences defence.
Exactly. And I hate to use the word defence because like I want to defend the show. And I really don't. I detest the show. You know, you could have used all those togas that nobody turned up in, except for the announcing team, and just used them to wipe up the shit that stank up the joint that night. But but the fact that it has such an impact, even if it's in a negative way, is one of the reasons why I didn't necessarily put it in the useless category. If that makes sense to people, I realise it's sort of outside the box, but is there any sense? Am I making any sense here to anyone?
It was so bad, it could only get better after it. For me, that's not a defence. No.
I just got this image of Todd Pettingill bending over a bucket, wringing out his toga. We already commented about it on our WrestleMania podcast. And this actually doesn't really have anything about being uselessness, but it's more maybe just uselessness of the production value. That whole Caesar's Palace toga shit, it was atrocious. I mean, that it looked cheap, it looked tacky. And it's unfair to compare it to a three-year-old's birthday party, because at least at a three-year-old birthday party, the kids would be having fun. And nobody fucking had fun watching this.
Can I cut you off a bit when you're giving your explanation on how this had a use? So could you just kind of expand on it a bit?
It's maybe a misinterpretation on my part of how we want to categorise this, but like I said, when I think useless, to use In Your House 3 as the example, I think in a sense of the pay-per-view may as well have never happened. Because after the pay-per-view, we were back where we started. In that sense, if it makes sense in that regard, this was going somewhere terribly bad, the wrong path to go. And it's probably, the way I'm explaining this now, probably shoots holes in my picking of King of the Ring 95 in that regard, I will readily admit. But it's just, it's hard for me to call it the most useless ever, because of... the large impact it had. Like I say, it's a bit outside the box thinking. I can appreciate if people aren't necessarily with it, but that was my sort of train of thought.
No, I get that. But I'd argue that although it's over a longer period of time, by King of the Ring, had to reset, so it was almost like that period didn't happen anyway.
And wider picture, 1 year later, they're back where they started at the start of WrestleMania 9.
In which case, in that very succinct way, I cede the point to both of you.
Droford from TVWW Forum says, WCW Uncensored 1995. Main event was Hogan vs. Vader in a strap match, but it wasn't even a title match because it was all unsanctioned. Plus the shitty ending of Hogan winning. Yeah, that's great. Plus the shitty ending of Hogan winning the strap match by dragging Ric Flair to all four posts after Flair took the strap off Vader is the most retarded finish to a match I've ever seen. This has got the Flair in drag moment as well, which is just the most weird thing in the world. Flair in drag cutting a promo at the camera. King of the Road. This is one again. There's the dividing line between worst and useless here. This is certainly in the argument for worst. It's in the argument for most useless too. Because if you're going to do Hogan Vader with no finish for Hogan or Vader, I can't see much reason for why this show ever happened.
Name Uncensored and the year here, and you pretty much got a case for any of them. with the exception of the launch of Nitro, and I don't wish to underplay that by any means. Creatively speaking, in terms of what we get for most of the year, it is absolute dross, absolutely awful, and this is just a prime example of that. You know, the Hogan Vader, just you recanting the ending, just lacks such sense. And
in fact, Bobby Heenan's on commentary screaming, "This doesn't make any sense." He's got it to Vader.
I just love the idea of okay, we're going Hogan versus Vader. Okay, Flair, you're jobbing again, brother.
Right, who's going to lose? Flair. Robert Rudepan from the Wrestling Forum says, probably Bound for Glory 2014. I mean, this was supposed to be the biggest show of the year and it did nothing. No storylines were advanced. Hell, Joe's the ex-champion defending the title, but his giving the title up was already taped. They had no world title match and Rude and Lashley's world title match had already been taped. I mean, this one takes the cake. It's not even a question. This was all done to advance the TNA Wrestle 1 relationship. So completely useless, because look where that went. Chucks4W from F4W says, this same show, pretty pointless. A load of TV had been taped before the live show and all the belts changed hands, but they still booked X and Knockout title matches even though the champions weren't actually the champions. Pretty great stuff.
As Kieran alluded to earlier, I think any suggestions for TNA pay-per-view is null and void, because all the pay-per-views were fucking useless. Okay,
there
was
two.
Apart, what the two were, they the
Joe and Angle.
Yeah, okay,
the two big Joe and Angle pirates. Okay.
To be fair, and I'm not one for giving TNA any credence whatsoever, they have had a lot of good matches over the years, especially with the X guys, Joe and Co, AJ. Yeah, but the premise is, if no one's buying your pay-per-view, surely it's useless, because it's a pay-per-view at the end of the day. Hence my comment. It was a facetious comment, but
Yeah, a couple more. We'll get to them here since we're talking TNA. Supersonic from FLW says, Victory Road 2009. Many other shows will rightfully be mentioned, but this is the one that ticks every single fucking box. Not one match above 3 stars. Terrible dated booking, shitty wrestling, and easily the worst non-WCW pay-per-view match of the 2000s. Referencing, of course, the Jenna Maraska Charmel fiasco.
Oh,
remember that?
Jesus.
You got Kevin Nash beating AJ Styles clean on this show with a choke slam. The main event Mafia beat Beer Money. Samoa Joe beat Sting, and the world title match in the main event is Kurt Angle versus your boy Mick Foley.
Yeah, Kieran mentioned regressive there when referring to a pay-per-view earlier. I think that this is pretty much another prime example of that. I find it a hard one with TNA pay-per-views, and I don't want to sound facetious, but you know, so few people actually see these pay-per-views outside of the two that we've already mentioned.
So your argument is, if a tree falls in the woods
and no one is around to hear it, does it make a sound? There's a lot of TNA pay-per-views you could use for this topic. It's so ugly because we referenced earlier about how pay-per-views in later years become interchangeable.
Yeah.
I think when it comes to TNA, and I don't want to knock them unfairly, but the fact that so many of them are taped at the same place, they're pretty much always involving the same individuals. It's very rare you have individuals elevated for so many of the years of the company. I find it really hard to differentiate any pay-per-views, so to judge them accurately, I think, is a bit difficult on my part, at least, anyway.
But Sunlight Submission Column, there's a lot of those shows back now from 2006 where they're reviewing TNA pay-per-views, and even then, during a period of time when TNA actually had some hot stuff going on, whether it was the AJ Daniels Joe series or LAX come to fruition, there was that thing every pay-per-view where it was the same kind of review where we're just waiting for something to happen on these fucking shows and nothing actually is.
There's never any evolution, is there?
No, nothing. John Carr 92 from the UK fan forum with another one here. Victory Road 2011, lackluster undercard followed by a number one contender match with Kennedy and Van Damme that had no winner. I think this is the one that had the chant of what the fuck was that, was the chant? Restart the match. And just when you thought it couldn't get worse, Jeff Hardy comes out completely off his tits, stumbling over during his entrance at a couple of points, prompting Bischoff to come out and call an audible and whisper to Sting to order him to end the match quickly. Sting even agreed with "I agree" to the resulting bullshit chants. And how did TNA apologise? They gave fans a refund in the form of 6 months free access to their on-demand service.
We're sorry, but for all you sadomasochists out there, here's a real treat.
They almost monopolise useless pay-per-views.
At least we can remember that main event, though.
Yeah.
Yes. well done, Jeff.
Which means 2 Angle Joe matches and Sting and Pilled Up Jeff. Fantastic.
Triple G from Wrestling Forum says, and it's another one of those in your house, is, I'd probably go for It's Time from December 1996. That show provided, advanced, and accomplished absolutely nothing. Even December to Dismember was so awful that the WWE learned not to do brand-exclusive pay-per-views anymore. It ended up leaving an impact of some kind. It's Time isn't even really worth talking about.
And yet here we are.
What a fantastic contribution that was.
Yeah, that wins for the contribution.
That's pretty great so far. We actually talked about this in our History of the Moonlight War timeline not that long ago. This is Sid and Brett in the main event, Sean on commentary, and absolutely nothing else of note on this show. Taker and Terry Gordy in the Armageddon match.
Mick Foley took some excellent bumps in the straitjacket.
Either the lowest buy rate or the second lowest buy rate of 96 for the WWF. It was this or International Incident. And consequently, Starsky 79 from FOW says, in your house 9 International Incidents. No reason for any of that to be on pay-per-view. No title matches and nothing that couldn't have taken place on Raw.
I'm going to disagree on this one off the basis of, oh god, no, I don't. I was going to say Sid's return, but I don't want to use that one. Jesus, that's not a defense of it.
you use that to bury WCW 3 years later.
Yeah, so yeah. Forget that one. Scratch that. That won't make post-production, I hope. I will disagree with this one on the basis of it's one of the few occasions where they actually did something relevant with Vader. By having Vader go over in the...
It was such a gutless win, though, you know, in the 6-man tag main event. Cornette helps him.
He does, but at least Vader gets the pin off the Vader bomb. It gives him some momentum, and it lends itself logically to going with Sean and Vader for SummerSlam. Now, we know what a botched job they did of that, and the fact that they didn't go with Vader in the end. But at least in that point in time, it's trying to help elevate someone who, unlike Mabel with King of the Ring, is at least credible, can at least go in the ring, can at least in theory have a good main event match on what they push as their second biggest pay-per-view.
I get the point, but Vader wasn't put over the way he should have been put over.
Sean dived on him right after he won, didn't he? Obviously, yeah, he did.
Probably not Sean. That's a stretch, I think, Carl. Stretching more than Mabel's pants.
Brutus is not my name from WrestlingForum.com says the infamous Great American Bash 2006 pay-per-view where half the wrestlers were pulled out due to elevated liver enzymes and Mark Henry was pulled for injury. This was a what a calamity.
They may as well have just pulled the plug.
This is the Punjabi prison match where Big Show ended up taking the place of the Great Khali. It was supposed to be a 3-0 with Finlay, Regal and Lashley. Teddy Long comes out and says, well, Lashley can't wrestle due to elevated liver enzymes. Said what the reason was. And Lashley just walked out and that was the end of it. They had Regal versus Finlay, which got boring chance. Again, if you want to give points to noteworthy occurrences, King Booker wins the championship for Mysterio here and Chavo turns heel. Does that hold any water for anyone around the table?
And not particularly, because at that point, Ray's already screwed. You know, his title reign's become so irrelevant, it amounts to an ornament around his waist by that point.
When so many guys go down, it's going to be such a on-the-fly... I was going to say on-the-fly fix-up job, but it really wasn't. Completely worthless.
Yeah, this is supposed to be Batista's big comeback against Mark Henry, but Mark Henry got injured, surprisingly. And Mr. Kennedy made his return as well against Batista in a DQ finish.
Yay.
So it's like, this just felt like it progressed nothing.
Yeah.
JN Lister from the UK Fan Forum says King of the Ring 2000 must be among the most disappointing shows as it was set up to look like you were going to get Benoit versus Guerrero with the winner facing Angle or Jericho right around the time that those guys were usually tearing up second from the top. Benoit was done for the night about 5 minutes after the show started and then Guerrero lost the next match. I've got to add, sorry before I throw this to everyone, the evening gown match.
Oh God. I'll say that at least, you know, Patterson and Briscoe's tits were more authentic than half the females on the roster. I think it's fair to say that it's the worst pay-per-view the company does that year. You know, we didn't even mention the Rusorific, if you like, tables versus dumpster match with the Dudleys.
That was the highlight of the show.
But in terms of contrived shit, unless you're a big fan of seeing Bubba Ray stick his tongue out, which I'm personally not. But the reason I wouldn't put this as useless, as poorly as the King of the Ring is booked, Angle wins the King of the Ring, which I think is absolutely the right way to go. I know they don't make his sort of reign, if you like, particularly memorable, and they sort of try to play into the Kurt's comedic timing more than anything else. But at least it's him winning a tournament, it's the right guy going over, and it is important for Kurt to have momentum going forward. He would win the title before the end of the year. And although Trips somehow manages to get out of doing the job, the belt goes onto The Rock where it needed to be at that point. It was time for Rock to have a run, so on that basis, I don't put it down as a useless one.
The evening gown match is just, I think something similar to that happened at my family do the other week. You know,
the sanitary towel as a weapon was a stretch.
God, yeah. The main event, the tag main event, we've already talked about tag main events, where the title's on the line and stuff. It was Rock, Kane, Undertaker versus Triple H. Shane and Vinnie Mac himself,
former world champion.
The tournament itself wasn't great. They kind of made wrong choices here and there if they wanted to make a really entertaining King of the Ring, because the potential was there with Jericho and Guerrero and Benoit and so on. But in terms of like the immediate benefit of Kurt Angle winning King of the Ring, well, the following pay per view was fully loaded, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In which he wrestled the Undertaker.
Yeah.
After the way that match went, it was pretty useless that he'd won the King of the Ring.
I even referenced there, they didn't make what they should have of his King of the Ring win, and they played more on Kurt's comedic timing. My argument is that at least it's the right guy going over. In contrast that to the previous year with Billy Gunn. You know, at least I'm not going to defend the show and say it's perfectly booked and everything that kicks on from there is fantastic and does well. And as I say, when it comes to the main event, it's the right guy winning the belt. So on that basis alone, whilst I think the pay-per-view is generally booked poorly, I can't categorise it as useless.
Yeah, I'm with Carl on this one. And especially when you consider it's 2000, Rock gets the title, whether the significance of getting it in here, or would it have made more sense and more money doing it elsewhere in a different setting, it's still the title going on the biggest draw in the biggest year of the company. So I'm with Carl. It's, you know, the frustrations of the show aside, it had its uses.
LCC from UK Fan Forum says, got to be sold out 97 for me. The card was full of fucking dross. Jarrett versus Wall Street, DDP versus Norton with the NWO B team and their attempts to lure Paige. The Outsiders miraculously pulling the Steiners into a match that resembles four sweaty bollocks bouncing off each other. And of course, the sweltering pile of donkey shit that is Hogan and Giants, with Nick motherfucking Patrick trying to put himself over. When the second best match on the card involves Bagwell and Riggs, you're in trouble. If it wasn't for the average yet underwhelming ladder match, this would be unbearable. We talked about this last week, and obviously you can go back and listen to that show at squaredcirclegazette.podbean.com in our History of the Monday Night War timeline series, where we talked about the first quarter of 1997 in the Monday Night War. This show came up universally panned around this table, obviously. I don't know, I can't disagree with this. I'm just looking around the table to see who's going to say the word first.
Loser.
There you go.
There's not much I can add to this that I didn't reference in the previous podcast, but considering the ham-fisted attempt I made at trying to explain why I didn't think WrestleMania 9 was useless, I think Kieran was on some sort of logical lines when it came to sold out on the last show. So I want to see if he can make give it the old yeoman's effort and see if you can do better than me.
No, I'm not even going to try.
Oh, you
The point I'm going to make is it could have been of use. It's a concept show. The fact that it wasn't used as a narrative function of any story, but when it's over, it's completely was. This was, at the end of the day, a useless show. because it was used in the wrong context. If it was used in a different context to progress the story, say an underdog, you know, spoils the plans and beats Hogan at the end. But seeing as that wasn't the case, it was coming out of it a completely useless show.
Yeah, may as well have never happened, because I think your exact words.
I think this is almost actually a useful show, because it taught them never to fucking do it again.
Well, they did do the NWO.
They still did an NWO Nitro, so I'm not even giving them a pass on that.
Which absolutely tanked. Mr. LaSalle from Pro Wrestling Only says, Battle Ball 93 was less useful than a typical Clash. No storylines were advanced and zero standout matches. Hell, it was barely referenced on TV afterward. Battle Ball 93 is a strong candidate. There's a few strong candidates in 93 for WCW, making for the useless shows. And this one may be the king of the mountain, if you will.
Yeah, I caught you watching this when I came home yesterday.
Ashamed myself. I felt like parents coming in while you got porn on you.
Getting down, dick in your hands. And
I wasn't that happy to watch the show.
I know it happened, son, but I don't want to see it.
Yeah. It's I remember watching this and just being bewildered as to why does this exist. And why am I watching it now? Even like, I don't know why I went through it all. Because the benefit of the network is you can look at the chapters and see who won. Yeah, I still opted to watch this absolute trash. I can't remember many of the matches outside of, like, I know Cactus Jack and Vader teamed up. I think it was in the first match
against,
or something.
Against Cole of Harlem Heat and Charlie Norris.
Charlie Norris. So Cole of Harlem Heat, Cole was Booker.
Well, actually, I think Cole was Stevie, but... No, Cole...
No,
I
wait. No.
Actually, yeah. the wrong guy did go out. They said the wrong guy's name.
So what, did Stevie go out?
Stevie went out.
So Stevie went out and is supposed to be Booker T.
Who gives a shit?
So is Cole Booker T? But it's just... It was just bad. It was just bad from beginning to end. You have, like, a weird one where it's, like, Dustin Rhodes is out with, like,
Dustin
the two
and
Kongs.
Dustin and King Kong against Awesome Kong and the Equalizer or something like that.
I mean,
oh, the fucking Equalizer. Yeah.
There are some bad matches. Just at the end, the only benefit, I guess, is that Vader wins in the end. But he's already fucking champion, so it doesn't mean anything.
The only thing of note I could say is they announced the steps for Starrcade, where Flair puts his career on the line against Vader. They do a pretty good little backstage sketch. That's probably the highlight of the whole show, honestly.
The one thing that really kind of irritated me, just because of the repetition, is this little fucking gimmick they do throughout the show, where every time they do the announcements, Mean Gene is doing this thing with
Fifi,
right? It was like Ric Flair's, I don't know, mattress, I guess. And it was just, they're like flirting and so on. And it's like, oh, okay, well, that's a thing. I'm sure that's probably Mean Gene's idea. Then they do it again. And again, and again, and again, and again. And it just keeps going. It's the same thing over and over again. And with actually no purpose. It's like, all right, Mean Gene, we get the gag. You're trying to cop off. But like, it wasn't even like a thing of like where they're building up to it, where they're just doing the job normally, and then maybe she says something flirty to him, maybe he says something flirty back. Like, do some sort of build if this was going to be a thing.
Gee, in all fairness, I do not want to see a Mean Gene build up.
That'll be discussed in the build up show next time.
Yeah, it's just like, it's not funny.
I can't see the argument that if this was done properly, that this, wouldn't be the most useless. This is me clutching at straws.
Your sentence should have simply been, they did this, it shouldn't have happened.
That would have sufficed.
It's pretty much like the whole. The only point of this show then is to get the Tumblr in, because the Tumblr's over from previous Rumbles or something.
Yeah, that's
the only function of this whole show. Yeah.
Intrigue works well as a TV show. I always thought the Battle Bowl should have been a TV, like a Clash special, but doing it on pay-per-view is just a fucking disaster of an idea.
Yeah, it would have made sense on TV. It's that whole notion again of, you know, you're trying to get people to pay money for something, but they're not entirely sure what they're going to see, so, you know, what the hell do you expect the sort of buy rate to be? These Battle Bowl shows in general are a bit of a cluster. Was never a fan of the concept on pay-per-view. Is it the most useless?
It's close.
It's a contender.
I think it's a real contender.
Yeah.
There is absolutely no reason. Nothing progresses. Like I said, the only thing is the announcement of the Starrcade main event and the Stips.
But shouldn't that have been done on TV where, in theory, more people have seen it?
Yeah, probably. Fanny Pack from the UK Fan Forum with a vote here for WrestleMania 11. Was any match half decent? Pammy on top form and a huge celeb for 95, but the rest of them were dross. I think that was the year America the Beautiful was sang by a woman who looked either blind or in distress, maybe both, saying that she was a much more comfortable watch than Brett Backlund. We talked a lot about this, as well as WrestleMania 9 in our ranking the WrestleMania series that you can listen to in the archives. In terms of useless, do you go for this one at all? It really didn't do anything long term in the sense of, If it was built around Lawrence Taylor to try and draw big buy rate, it failed in that regard. It didn't make Bigelow. Bigelow's career was killed by this. It didn't do much for Diesel at all because of the way that match played out. Brett was cemented as guy in the middle for the rest of the year based off this show. I think the Harris boys were on it, so that automatically docks it a lot of points for me. Useless, yes, no.
I think it's a decent shout for a useless one.
Do you give any points maybe to the fact that it helped launch Sean in an indirect way?
I was just going to say that the one redeeming feature and the one that could maybe give it some credence is the fact that it's a showcase for Sean in a prominent featured role. By the same token, it's a bit of a trade-off in the sense that it, in a sense, harms Diesel. We're all far more concerned with seeing Sean showcase than what happens with Diesel, but in terms of your looking ahead for your company and who you're going to keep the belt on for the rest of the year, you know, it's a bit of a, they sort of cancel each other out to a certain extent, and it would be a while before Sean was properly elevated anyway. But this I always remember this as the WrestleMania where it's the intro says it all for me, really. It's WrestleMania with Nicholas Turturro, with Jonathan Taylor Thomas, with Pamela Anderson and Jenny McCarthy. This is, you know, and Salt and Pepper feeling up Bret Hart at the start. You know, this is, and Bret with the biggest shit-eating smirk on his face. You know, the cat that got the cream. I think it's a genuine contender again.
I'd say no. At the time, you know, I fell in love with Shawn at WrestleMania 10. So this did feel like progression, although it didn't by any means make him a tippy-top guy. It did feel like progression, so I'd say that had a use in one respect. But that's about it.
That's all we have.
In fact, I've got it. I can't believe it's taken me this long. You know when Sean first turned heel?
On my, yeah.
And his new entrance music? Yeah. That wasn't Sherry's voice, was it? That was yours.
Yeah. Your point being,
it's all falling into place.
Yeah, I think this is a useless pay-per-view. besides, ignore like all the undercard stuff and like the celebrity involvement. That was his name, Taylor Thomas.
JTT,
JTT,
star of Home Improvement.
It just came across as very kind of low rent, I think. But it's just, but yeah, you're absolutely right. The Bret Hart facing Bob Backlund did absolutely nothing for him. It didn't. I don't think it necessarily knocked him like completely down, but it didn't build him up. It's something for him to do. It's like, who have we got left? Well, it's either Bob Backlund or the janitor. Well, Bob Backlund's already brought his gear, so it's like we'll just throw him out there. Shawn Michaels. That was his kind of like big moment, I guess, it ain't kind of break. But then, like, you know, later on, we've already talked about King of the Ring 95. Diesel, the babyface champ, retains. There's nothing much there. I know it would be a bit of a cliche just to always do the story where the babyface wins the title at WrestleMania, but the babyface retaining the belt against a small opponent isn't even in the main event. Well, that was pointless. Yeah. There's nothing to that. And then when you do get to the main event, you got a footballer going over, like, you know, a big guy. The footballer ain't going to be there the next day. The big guy's buried. So that match was fucking useless. Completely useless.
No, I mean, I'm not going to argue against any of that. I'd just say, in context to WrestleMania 9, at least Shawn was one guy whose profile was raised from the show.
At least it was a future, I guess.
Yeah.
Positively year over year, because Shawn's run did draw better than 95, so I guess you can say that for it, maybe. Yeah. Paul Siebert from FOW Online says, Taboo Tuesday 2005 comes to mind, because it would mark the end of Steve Austin's last regular run in WWE. For those who don't remember the build, Bischoff had fired JR, and Austin was going to fight Coach in a street fight to get his job back. The problem was McMahon had no plans to put JR back on television, so Austin balked at the prospect of jobbing to Coachman and walked away. Batista was called in as a last-minute replacement and squashed Coachman and his two bodyguards, Vader and Goldust. In the end, Ross was still fired, so the whole thing was pointless. Other highlights include Eugene and Jimmy Snuka versus Rob Conway and Tomko.
Oh.
Fuck me!
Yeah.
This did have a very enjoyable Cena Angle Michaels three-way in the main event, but again, nothing of any kind of historical significance on this show. The match isn't so legendarily good that you could say that it makes it special, but worth a watch. What was mentioned there with the hideous Batista coach match with Vader fucking up the spine bust from Batista just yelling "fuck" at the top of his legs in between coughs was just delightful.
2005, that's worse. As you said, you got a good triple threat, but the rest of the show's bad. I think you can lumber that one, the 2005 Taboo Tuesday, in with the Cyber Sundays.
Yeah,
I think the whole thing, like
2006 especially.
Yeah, I think you can talk about individual matches that were decent on show. That's fine, but I just think as a general concept of a show, and there's quite a few of them. You know, that there's bragging rights and New Year's resolutions that we've had written into us. But yeah, this one's another one of those Cyber Sunday Taboo Tuesday, completely fucking pointless shows.
I can't really remember anything about the show. What was that triple threat?
Angle, Michaels, Cena.
Just on the fact that Angle and Michaels in the same ring together, even though I can't remember it, I'm not going to vote for this. No, no.
On general principle.
I very much think you can lump the Taboo Tuesdays and Cyber Sundays all together. They're so interchangeable. So in that sense, yeah, maybe it's a good pick.
With that said, we have run out of time to talk about your nominations, so just around the table very quickly, final thoughts. We talked about so many different shows. Your final votes individually around the table for your pick for the most useless pay-per-view of all time.
I'm going to go with WrestleMania 9 still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Carl?
Well, considering how I pretty much destroyed my own argument throughout the podcast when it comes to King of the Ring 95, I can't really pick that one, I suppose. But then again, if I choose WrestleMania 9 and agree with Kieran, it's going to look like I've just completely folded. So I'm going to say sold out.
Bob Holly was the replacement for Sabu.
Sabu wouldn't have made that much of a difference, G.
Bob, it would have been more than Bob Holly.
Punk would have still gone out first.
Matt Striker, Daivari,
yes!
Kevin Thorne, Mike Knox. December to December 2006.
One of the things you didn't even mention about that show is the fact that it came 7 days after the Survivor Series,
yeah,
and went 2 hours. It wasn't even 3 hours. It was 2 hours 15 minutes.
Yeah,
yeah, it went completely short as well. So yeah, in terms
didn't
of
even get their money's worth.
In terms of a show that just failed on every level, it's pretty hard to top or sink below.
Ass.
December to December 2006.
Ass.
There was still a good match on the show. So for that reason, I am going to pick In Your House 4. A show that I feel was completely devoid of absolutely anything. It was a terrible show still. The matches were awful. It shouldn't have happened. It may as well never have happened. So in terms of ticking all the boxes, if you want to use that term, In Your House 4 to me, I've never... King of the Ring 95 is probably a worse show in terms of direction, but this show's the worst in terms of just... Christ almighty, what a waste of time. What a waste of time in every way, and it was horrible, and I just can't... The debut of Goldust isn't enough for me on this show, let's put it that way. So with that said, I want to thank everybody for listening. If we didn't get to your nominations this time, I apologise. Like I said, we will be back in 2 weeks' time to talk about the best build-ups in wrestling history. To get your nominations in, get them in early at scgradio@hotmail.com, and then we will guarantee to read them on the show. So, for G. John Chase...
He looks like a boxer.
For Kieran O'Rourke...
Oh, sure!
And for Carl Jones.
I don't know where I am.
I am Liam O'Rourke, and we are out of here.